even if only symbolically? I ask. His hand drops from above his head, and I'm kind of sad to see it go. I turn my attention back to the meatloaf. I feel like this is the place my mom was trying to create at home as a kid, he says, coming up behind me. The fork in my hand stalls midair. Really? I mean, I'm not sure she would have chosen sunflowers as her kitchen decor, but I think she was going for this kind of lived-in feel. I pick up a knife and poke at the sliced onions on top of the hamburger. You know, using lived-in to describe a place probably won't win you any favors. What kind of favors are up for grabs? He jokes. I ignore the way my stomach tightens and shut off the oven. I don't mean it in a bad way, he says. His eyes don't leave me as I work around the kitchen, getting plates and glasses and silverware out of the cabinets. Even though I feel completely comfortable in his presence, his attention on me makes me hyper-aware of everything. The way my shirt covers my backside, how my pants are a little loose in the leg and probably make my thighs look big, the crazy strands of hair that I had planned on taming before Holden got home from work. I gulp back my self-consciousness and hold a plate out to him. Here, I say, if you want dinner. I thought it wasn't included in my rate. His grin is adorable. I get now how women say they want to kiss a smile off a man's face, because that's exactly what my instinct is to do. Reach up, cup his face in my hands, and kiss the heck out of him. But I won't, because I don't hate myself too much. He takes the plate from me. Thank you. You're welcome. I bat my eyelashes at him and then bump him with my hip. I do draw the line on making your plate for you, which is a total thing around here. And I'm also filling my plate first because I'm starving. He laughs as I take a slice of meatloaf from the platter. Next to it, I add some mashed potatoes and baked beans. He trails behind me, taking a scoop of each, and then follows me to the table. What did you do today? He asks. I booked 2 reservations for next week, washed down the staircase, priced some sheets. I fill both glasses up with ice. Do you have any idea how expensive sheets can be? It's crazy. I love good sheets, he says, taking a glass from me. He fills both with tea before leading me back to the table. We sit across from each other like we've done it 100 times before. It seems so normal to have this man sitting in my kitchen, the evening sunlight dancing across his face for only me to see, while we have a conversation about our day. It's strange and sort of great if you like that kind of thing. I could like this kind of thing. The concept has me looking away from him in case he's a mind reader. I shake my head. Well, I suggest you keep your expectations low around here because I'm not shelling out that kind of money for a damn sheet. I don't care how many customers I might be able to attract. He opens his mouth and then closes it. The corners of his lips curl toward the ceiling. What? I ask. Nothing. You were going to say something. I wasn't. Liar. He sits back in his chair and crosses his arms over his chest. My comment, while true, was probably inappropriate, and I'd like to have this evening go smoothly, especially since you're trying to seduce me with meatloaf and potatoes instead of luxury linens. I snort. Is that what you think this is? I mean, I can't say it's a bad plan. I scoop a spoonful of mashed potatoes into my mouth and shrug. The move is more about putting myself into a position where I can't respond because I don't know what to say to that. He leans to the side and plucks a piece of paper out of his pocket. Here, I paid your taxes today. Sure enough, the bright red ink at the top of the sheet of stapled papers proves my taxes are paid in full, as in until the spring of next year, meaning a zero balance. I fall back in my chair and sigh. Talk about seduction. The tension I've carried at the base of my skull melts away. My body is looser, my smile wider. My brain shoots endorphins through my bloodstream like nobody's business. Suddenly, I'm not hungry. I don't care if the dishes get done. I just want to celebrate.
You think that's seduction?
He asks. There's a gravelly timbre to his voice I tune out. Instead, I get to my feet and dig a pint of ice cream out of the freezer.
How's that not seduction? I ask. Isn't seduction when someone does something that has an attractive element?
He stretches his legs out in front of him. I try not to focus on how his shoulders fill out his scrubs when he flexes and instead scoop ice cream into two bowls.
Is that how you define it?
He asks.
No, that's how Webster's defines it, I think.
I carry both bowls back to the table and hand one to him. The art of seduction is a process of making someone attracted to you, right? He quirks a brow.
Yes.
Well, Doc, I find the fact that you stayed true to your word and helped me out of a bind very seduction-y. He snorts as he lifts a brow.
Seduction-y, huh?
Seduction-y, I affirm. I mean, there was a part of me, a teeny tiny one, that considered that you could completely bail out on your part of this deal and I'd be screwed. I take a big bite of ice cream and watch him watching me. There's a lot going on across his features. Confusion, amusement, questions, and sexiness. But I think he wakes up like that.
File that under things I'd know had I woken up on time today.
You thought I wouldn't have paid the taxes after I agreed to?
He asks. If I would have really thought that, I wouldn't have agreed to this. But I find you to be a respectable man, so I took a risk. I scoop another bite of ice cream into my mouth as a shadow passes across his face.
What?
I ask with my mouth full of dessert. He shakes his head. I shrug.
So, what happened at work today?
I ask. How is Fred?
Holden takes a long, deep breath.
He starts to speak a couple of times, but stops.
He's jealous you got to marry me, huh?
It's a joke, clearly, but I'm trying to give him an opening to play off whatever he's thinking, because an inkling in my stomach tells me he's avoiding my question.
I got a call from Montgomery.
He says carefully. My spoon pauses for a half of a second before sinking back into the ice cream again.
That's good, right? He'll be here this week.
My throat burns as I focus on the black flecks in the vanilla.
That's awesome, Holden. I'll help you however I can.
He laces his fingers together on the table and works them back and forth. His teeth rest on his bottom lip as he seems to wrestle with something in his head. I can't make heads or tails of it, so I just take another bite. Finally, his hands break apart.
I know. I never second-guessed you for a minute, he says.
Because that's me.
Dependable.
I take my time getting another spoonful. There's no rush as I bring the utensil to my lips and wrap them around the cool metal. As the ice cream melts in my mouth, I close my eyes and pretend like I'm not here. That I'm not having a conversation with Holden about him leaving. I imagine instead that this is just my normal life with a cute guy and no worries.
A girl can dream.
But when I open my eyes again, his are fixated on me. His eyes burn with an intensity that chills me way more than the frozen cream. I shift in my seat, needing the fire inside me to stop. But when I look into his heated gaze, the warmth only spreads from my core. My head starts to cloud, as one's does in this kind of circumstance. I've been in them enough in my life to know this is the moment where things can go one way or the other. Good decisions versus bad ones. And I know I have to get a hold of myself right now, or I'll be on the dark side of things. I lick the melted ice cream off the spoon and wrinkle my nose as a distraction.
Are you trying to seduce me again?
He asks. a faint smile on his lips. "Want the truth?" I ask, sticking the spoon in the bowl.
"Sure."
My throat feels thick as I hesitate. I couldn't seduce you if I tried. Although I meant it, he doesn't seem to think so. And the embarrassment I expected to feel, the mortification I was counting on to disable the moment, isn't there. He laughs, but not at me. His grin isn't at my expense. Instead, it feels like the two of us are on the same side of a joke or story, together. Which is not what I had in mind. This was supposed to be a wedge between us, not a glue. Damn it.
"Do you believe that?"
he asks. I nod. "Yeah, for sure. I don't know anything about seducing someone." His chuckle is gritty as he sits back again. Even though it's only an extra few inches between us, I'm grateful for it. I need it. I need to disable the explosion ticking inside my body. "Don't laugh at me," I say.
"Oh, sugar, I'm not laughing at you."
I point my spoon at him. "Yes, you are. Why do you act like it's impossible for you to seduce me?" I want to say because you're you and I'm me, that I don't have the experience or confidence to go after a man who obviously doesn't need me. I want to explain that I wouldn't know where to start at actually trying to attract someone like him. But I don't say that because it's humiliating and probably fairly obvious. My spoon clinks as it hits the china. I get to my feet, cheeks pink, and head to the sink. I'm rinsing the bowl when he speaks again.
"Are you going to answer me?"
he asks. "No." I think he laughs again, but I don't turn around to make sure.
"Do you know what I find seductive?"
he asks. My body stills. I try to shake my head, but it barely moves. The chair squeaks as he gets up. The legs scratch against the hard wood, as if he's pushing it in.
"Kindness," he says.
"Humor.
Class.
Beauty." I tuck a piece of hair behind my ear. "So not lingerie and sweet nothings whispered in your ear?"
I joke. "Hardly. Under-promising and over-delivering are what turns me on."
I gulp. "Good to know."
"What turns you on, Sophie?"
"That sounds like a loaded question." He stands behind me. I can't feel him or see him, but I definitely am aware of his presence. The energy bouncing off him collides with my back and almost whirls me around to face him. I shut the water off and grip the edge of the sink.
"It's not," he says. "So answer it. Please."
The added please, filled with sweet sarcasm, makes me grin. I should answer with some self-deprecating mishmash of qualities and then slip outside for some fresh air. I'm in quicksand and I know it. But instead of grasping at a branch overhead and trying to pull myself up and out like any rational person would do, I just breathe evenly, slowly, and then, with deliberate movements, I turn around to face him. His eyes are hooded, his teeth nibbling at the corner of his lip. The locks of hair that have fallen on his forehead are darker, the shadows against his skin broodier. The testosterone that ripples off his body and pummels mine is intense and intoxicating, and I grab the counter behind me to keep steady. "This is doing it for me," I say, my gaze pinning his. He seems to be as surprised that I said that as I am. His brows shoot upward before his mouth dissolves into the sexiest, most, "You sure you want this, Sophie?" smirk that I've ever seen.
"You're making it very hard to be a gentleman," he says.
"Who are you kidding?
You've dangled spit in my face before. You're hardly a gentleman.
His chuckle tugs my laugh along with it. He wipes a hand down his angled jaw and watches me from a couple of steps back. My body hums under his attention. And while I'm usually second-guessing things at this point in the game, does he just want to get laid? Does he specifically want to sleep with me? What will this mean, if anything, if we act on all this? I'm as cool as a cucumber. Maybe it's because I know this might be over sooner than I even really thought. Maybe I just want this one memory of him. As his tongue slips along his bottom lip, I sigh. Maybe it's simply that I'm only human and I want that tongue on me. Chapter 17. Sophie. He drops his hand.
In normal situations, I'd construe your behavior as consent. But this is not a normal situation, and you are not a normal woman.
I lift a brow. He grins. What do you want to hear? I ask. His Adam's apple bobs in his throat. I think I might explode.
Is that a trick question? He asks.
Nope.
So you panting my name would be a sufficient answer?
I snort. Trash answer, Doc. He shrugs.
Look, I'm not functioning on all my brain cells right now. Thinking with two heads is hard.
Especially if they're both hard-headed.
He flashes me a look, making me giggle.
Look, maybe this isn't the right thing after all. I start to turn around, but he cages me against the counter with both hands. His breathing is shallow, his body warm, as it almost touches mine. I stand still and wonder if he can hear the speed of my blood roaring through my veins. If I moved, even a little bit, our skin would make contact, and that would be it for me. I'd dissolve on the spot. But I don't twitch a muscle, and neither does he. He doesn't even flutter those ridiculous lashes.
I want this to be the right thing, he says. But I don't want to complicate things between us.
I search his eyes for the truth. It's not hidden. It's right there, on the surface. He wants me as much as I want him. That feeling alone is heady as fuck. But there's also a stroke of concern, of care and caution, because he's looking at me. And while that should make me rethink whether this is a good decision, it instead makes me want him that much more. There will never be another Holden McKenzie waltzing into my life. There aren't many men like him. I know that's a fact. And while it might be a good thing in its own way, it also makes it an opportunity. One that I don't want to pass up. Things are already kind of tangled up, aren't they? I ask. He grins.
Does this mean you want me?
My legs ache. The apex of my thighs burns. My stomach squeezes so hard I nearly yelp for mercy. I reach out and touch his cheek. A smattering of stubble dots his skin. The coarseness of it against my palm is the final shot to my libido. I look him in the eye and smile. Only if you agree that I wasn't the one trying to seduce you. He leans forward, his breath hot against my neck.
But you were.
Words fail me as he presses kiss after kiss along my throat. My head falls back as he touches his lips in a trail along my jawline. A moan escapes my lips seconds before his mouth finds them. I arch my back as his lips work against mine. With each second that passes, his kisses become more frenzied. It's as if he's waiting for my consent, some kind of confirmation that I really do want this,
Or maybe it's that he's giving me time to change my mind. But what is crystal clear is that he wants it.
It's a good thing that I do too.
His tongue parts my lips. He grasps my head in both hands, and his tongue enters my mouth. I lean against the counter, my knees going weak, as he slowly and expertly demonstrates exactly how into this he is. I grip his hips and tug him closer. His hardened cock presses into my stomach. I whimper as he slips out of my mouth and sucks on my bottom lip, letting it spring free only when I open my eyes. "See," I say, gasping for air. "It's you who's seducing me." He grins as he lifts the hem of my shirt over my head. Taking a step back, he looks me up and down.
"I'm not too sure about that, sugar."
Our eyes meet. As if a clock is ticking down the seconds, we watch each other to see who will make the next move. I can taste his sweetness on my lips. My skin blazes from the caress of the backs of his knuckles. My core shakes with desperation, needing a release from the energy building.
"Last chance," he says.
"Do you want me to back out?"
"Fuck no."
"Good." With a confidence I didn't know I had, I reach out and raise his shirt up over his head. His grin deepens as he assists me in my venture. The fabric of my bra brushes across his chest, my nipples pearl, begging for his touch. I take a step back and assess. His abs are cut into six imperfect squares. A line of dark hair trails from his belly button to below his waistband. His shoulders are impeccable, his pectoral muscles rock solid. If this is a dream, I hope I never wake up. "You know what?" I ask. "Screw it. Maybe I am trying to seduce you." He laughs, the sound full and loud, as I dig my fingers into the sides of his scrubs and shove them down his legs. As if this were the cue he was looking for, he jumps into action. We become a living, breathing, frenzied mess of movements. Our hands fly everywhere, undoing clasps, stepping out of pants, throwing fabric to one side or the other. My bra hangs from the handle of the microwave. His scrubs lie atop the bowl of fruit on the counter. My fingers are in his hair, pulling his head to mine. His hands dig into my behind and drag my body into his. His lips press, his tongue laps, leaving a trail of his warm saliva all over my skin. My brain tries to process the sensations one at a time, but misfires as his nails bite into my ass and he lifts me onto the counter. I scoop myself to the edge, the stone cool beneath me. A condom appears from his wallet, and he slides it along his thick, hard shaft. I watch, applauding myself for not springing off the counter and climbing him like a freaking tree. "Ready?" he asks, holding himself in his hand. "I was ready 10 minutes ago." He grins as he approaches me. "Only 10? "Fine," I say, positioning myself so he can enter me. "I wouldn't have turned you down when I was 17. He shakes his head as he rests a palm on my shoulder. His cock hovers over my opening, and he watches me with the most alluring grin.
"I wouldn't have turned you down either," he says.
He slips inside me in one slow, deliciously smooth move. I scoot closer to the edge, wanting, needing, willing to beg for more. "Halton." His eyes roll to the back of his head as he fills me completely.
That's what I've been dreaming about right fucking there.
"As you slept on the floor,"
I tease,
wincing as he rolls his hips.
He opens his eyes.
You're going to tease me now? While I'm inside you?
He pulls back until the head of his cock is almost out before filling me again. My body shivers at his words. I'm inside you. I'm not in any position, in any sense of the word, to deal with that kind of language, so I just stick with it.
I'll always tease you, I moan, whether or not you're inside me.
He stills. His palm on my shoulder tenses before he grips me again. I think he whispers, I hope so, but I'm not sure. Before I can think about it too much, he's driving into me again. The air fills with a mixture of his cologne and the smell of sex. My hair sticks to my back as it topples from the haphazard knot at the top of my head. He runs a palm down my chest and over each breast, rubbing each nipple against the calloused skin of his hand. It's sensation overload, and I whimper as it all boils together in one crazy hot cauldron deep in my core. Damn you, I say, each word uttered in a hiccuped breath. His knees hit the cabinet doors with each thrust, knocking into the wood with a force that has me vaguely concerned about repairs. I can feel his fingers in the skin of my backside as he drags me so that I'm half off the stone. I twist my leg around his waist, my top half barely propped up on my elbows. As I gaze up at his face, it's like gasoline has been added to an already burning fire. Holden, I shout, the flames licking through my veins. He doesn't say a word, just watches me fall apart beneath him. I thrash my head back and forth, the explosion barreling through my body almost too much to take. Colors paint my sight, the sound of our bodies coming together ricocheting through my ears. I can hear, smell, taste nothing but Holden McKenzie. It's incredible. He eases his thrusts slowly, deliberately, taking his cues from me. Finally, when there's nothing left to coax from my body, he stills. His hand comes out and brushes a strand of hair off my face. The tenderness in his eyes makes me shiver. I wait for him to speak, to say something to break the ice. I don't even care if it's something annoying right now. Instead, he pulls out and then surprises me. He slips one arm under my back and the other behind my legs. Before I know what's happening, I'm being carried through the kitchen. What are you doing? I ask, my throat tight and raw. Taking you to bed. Why? He grins down at me as he kicks my bedroom door open. Because I haven't finished yet. I rest my head on his shoulder, my arm draped around his neck. Sweat dots his skin and coats his hair, and I don't tell him. But I could stay right here for the rest of the night. He lays me in the middle of my bed before climbing in with me. On his knees, he hovers over me. The air between us shifts. The lust from earlier seems to have disappeared, and in its place is a reverence that settles heavily on my chest. He touches his lips to mine before rolling me on top of him. I straddle his waist and watch him smile up at me. You're enjoying this, aren't you? I tease.
You have no idea.
He raises his hips until his cock digs into my skin.
Now, will you please sit on me so I can enjoy you again?
I nod in appreciation. Guiding him to my opening, I pause before I sit down. I would like to say that I appreciate your use of please. Good manners, Doc, I say. He moves himself, trying to shove into me again. I stay lifted ever so slightly, so he can't. He fires me a faux glare before gripping my hips.
Please.
I drop down in one swift, fluid movement until he's sunk completely inside me. We move together,
moaning in unison. It's a dance that feels familiar, yet so foreign at the same time. Each movement is matched perfectly, a push for a pull. Sometimes slow, sometimes fast, but always right. I had no idea. Not a damn clue that sex could be like this. So good, so hot, so everything I've never had before. It's not a completely fair apples-to-apples kind of comparison when considering the men I've been with before, but still, this sets the bar high. He takes care of my body, makes me laugh, treats me like both his friend and his lover. It's the wildest experience I've ever had, and one I'm sure I'll never forget. Even when he leaves. Especially when he leaves. When I'm snuggled next to him, hours after the sun has gone down, and after Holden has gone down, twice, and our dinner is cold and mostly untouched, that unfortunate little reminder rears its head. This is so very temporary. Magnificent and incredible, but still so impermanent. And I fall asleep with my cheek against Holden's chest and my heart safely inside mine. Chapter 18. Sophie. The morning sun shines brightly through my office window. Steam rises from the cup of coffee on the corner of my desk and lures me in with its heavenly scent. I pull the mug closer and take a deep breath of the aroma with the hope that it will ground me. Put my feet on the floor, lure me back into reality. Because after last night, my head is in the clouds. I floated from my bed to the kitchen, where I found a freshly brewed pot of coffee waiting for me. Somehow I drifted toward my office, where I discovered that Holden had locked the front door on his way out this morning. Then I sort of danced to my desk with not a care in the world, and that's concerning. I have cares in the world. Lots of them. It would behoove me to remember that. It's just because I got some sleep last night, I say before taking a sip of coffee. But even I didn't believe that. The only part that sleep plays in how I feel this morning is because I slept on Holden after sleeping with him. It's not a big deal, I say, letting the warmth of the mug soak into my palms. I'm a big girl. I can separate sex from emotions. I set my mug down and wish it were that easy to set aside feelings, particularly the ones that I have an inkling are going to get me in trouble. In the center of my desk lies a receipt from the elderly couple who stayed with me. Mr. Ingram's signature is shaky. So were the words, "bless you," that he carefully printed along the bottom of the paper when he checked himself and his wife out early one morning. I settle back in my seat and gaze out the window. The Ingrams have such a beautiful relationship. He'd hold her hand when they walked to their car, and I'm not sure she ever opened a door for herself. She laughed at his jokes, which, by the little wink she'd toss me, I'm sure she's heard 100 times over their years together. It's as if the years they've spent together have drawn them even closer. All I can figure is that they got married in a different day and age, where attention spans were longer. People valued things differently back then. The top of the totem pole wasn't a shiny car or a fancy college degree. It was a life well curated with people who love you. I pick up a picture frame from beside my computer. In the photo, Grandma is bursting at the seams with pride as my brother, my sister, and I stand beside her. My thumb runs over the glass. I'm sorry I didn't understand in time, I whisper to her. My chest tightens as I think about how I let her down. I shunned her advice. I was so determined to leave, to do something bigger and better than anything in Honey Creek. The truth is that life outside my hometown was filled with shiny objects and dazzling promises, but what it lacked was something even better. The simple things. S'mores on paper plates in the evenings with neighbors. Dottie's chicken noodle soup when you're sick. Your sister coming over in the middle of the night because she watched a crime documentary and is too scared to sleep alone. The ability to pick your brother up from the bar when he's had too much to drink. "Shake this crap off," I mumble. The crunch of gravel grabs my attention, and I look out the window. My brother's car pulls next to the flagpole. The front door of the honey house squeaks open. By the time the door shuts, Job is standing in my office with a grin as wide as Tennessee. "What?" I ask, raising a brow.
"What do you mean, what?"
"I mean, what are you looking at me like that for?"
"What am I looking at you like?"
"Like you want me to throw my stapler at you." He chuckles. I jiggle the mouse on my computer. The screen comes to life with a beach scene, prompting me for my password. I type it in as my brother makes himself at home. He sits across from me and props a boot on the edge of my desk. "Get your foot down," I tell him.
"Sorry."
He sits up with both feet on the ground.
"Better?"
"Yes."
"Great."
He holds my gaze. The corner of his lip slides up as if it's trying to slide something out of me. "Want to tell me what this is all about?" I ask. He relaxes back in his chair.
"How's married life treating you?"
"Good."
"Just good?"
"I didn't come over last night in case you were getting some." "Job!" I sit back in my chair so hard that it rolls a little from the force. "What are you doing?" My face heats as I look into my brother's brown eyes. There's a twinkle of roguery, of the troublemaker I know him to be. But despite his antics, he's the one man I've been able to count on my whole life. He might come to my aid with a hangover or with a girl I don't know, or even two, sometimes, on his arm. But he comes. Every time. It makes it hard to be irritated with him for too long.
"What?"
he asks.
"Is it that crazy to assume you might be screwing your husband?"
"I'm not talking about my sex life with you. That's just...
no.
Ew."
"Sounds to me like you might not have a sex life to talk about. Because if you aren't fucking like rabbits on day... whatever it is of your marriage, then something might be wrong."
My face is in flames. I can tell by the heat radiating from it and from Job's triumphant grin.
"Jerk."
"Oh my gosh," I groan. "Can you just please go to the kitchen and get breakfast and get out of here? Don't you have someone in this county to sell a house to?" Instead of getting up, he settles in. I consider how much damage my stapler would actually cause. Emergency room kind of damage I can't handle, but he could probably superglue a wound shut himself without too much of a problem. It might be worth it.
"I actually don't have an appointment until noon, and I was supposed to go fishing with Aaron this morning, but he canceled on me." "Lucky for you,"
he says with a grin. My head falls to the desk, and my forehead rests gently on the edge. "Please tell me you just remembered that's not true and have to leave." "I," Job begins, but is cut off by another voice coming from the kitchen.
"Hey!"
Liv shouts down the hallway. "In here!" I call. Job looks over his shoulder as our sister comes barreling into the room. She plops down in the chair next to Job with a hefty sigh. She looks from me to Job and back to me.
"Did I miss something?"
"No, just Job interrogating me on my sex life, of all things," I say, firing him a dirty look. He grins.
"Of note, there isn't much of one to discuss."
Liv snorts, throwing a hand through the air.
"I'm going to have to call bullshit on that.
There's no way when a woman is alone in a house with that man, of all men, no offense, Job, especially when he looks at Sophie the way he does. She leans against the armrest and looks at our brother. She just doesn't want to tell you the dirty details. Good, because I don't actually want them. Then why are you asking? I ask. I'm just trying to rile you up a little bit. It's so easy these days. He leans forward and rests his elbows on his knees. He's good for you, I think. I might have to actually like the bastard. You don't? Liv asks. There's not much not to like. Job rolls his eyes as he gets to his feet. You're insinuating dirty things about your brother-in-law, Livy. Yeah, Livy, I tease. Whatever, I was only stating things that are general knowledge. Facts, if you will. Liv shrugs. Anyway, my boss is getting transferred to Rockery, so if either of you are hiring, I'll take the job. Liv gives us her best practiced smile. Yeah, I'm good, Job says. But thanks anyway. What? Liv asks. You don't think I'd be a good personal assistant? Every realtor needs a personal assistant. He winces as he looks down at her. I'd like one I can fuck. Thanks. Liv's jaw drops open as I laugh. You still have your job, right? I ask. Yeah, Liv says. But corporate is sending Henry's replacement next week, and I don't want to work with anyone else. She sticks out her bottom lip. Henry spoils me. Job chuckles as he heads to the door. I'm grabbing breakfast and then heading out. Chin up, Liv. Call me if you need me, Soph. I will, I say. And tell that husband of yours to call me, too. I want to take him out for a beer. I narrow my eyes. A beer? A beer, he repeats, grinning. Just a beer, Job? His grin grows wider. That's what I said, isn't it? I know what you're thinking, I warn. Me too, Liv chimes in. This never ends well. Job shrugs as he starts down the hallway. I roll my eyes as he disappears from sight and sound. Liv gets to her feet. I have to get to work too. Have a good day, I tell her. You too. The door closes roughly behind her. I swivel in my chair and watch as Job climbs into his truck. He revs the engine as Liv walks in front of it, earning him her middle finger. Despite the antics and irritation of my brother, I find myself smiling as he pulls away. I turn back toward my desk when Grandma's, my, wedding ring catches the light. It sparkles, shining beautifully just for me. My chest squeezes as I think of the way Holden's eyes shone similarly the moment he placed it on my finger. And how similarly, too, my heart feels when I think of him, compared to when I think of my family. It's like he's my family. And while that might not technically be true, it feels real. Genuine. True. And it warms me to the core. While I let it. I live in that place for a few minutes. A place full of locked doors before work, shared meals after, and kisses in bed that feel special. It gives me hope that those can be a part of my life one day. That someone will want to share those things, their life, with me, no matter what. A love like the Ingrams. That's what I want. Their relationship is something I have always dreamed of, but have never really seen. I've only imagined what a connection like that might look like. Now, after spending time with Holden, I have an inkling of what it might feel like. I know the agreement we made about our marriage. It's no great question what his plans are. But as I study the ring on my finger and think about the way his lips feel against my forehead in the morning when he thinks I'm sleeping, a sliver of hope settles in my heart anyway. Against better judgment, I let my heart and head consider that
Maybe, in an unbelievable twist from the universe, Holden will pick me. A burning sensation flows through my core. A warning shot from the part of my brain saddled with protecting me. The jolt is uncomfortable, searing in my chest like a drink of hot coffee right from the pot. It serves its point to remind me of the dangers of hope, of just how destructive the pain can be if I daydream too much. Because at the end of the day, that's what a life with Holden is, a daydream. And I'd be smart to remember that. My hand falls to my side. I clear my throat. Don't get too ahead of yourself, I say, and get back to work.
Chapter 19. Holden. The song on the radio is a country tune. It's something about spray painting cars and spending summers stacking hay, about growing up in the middle of nowhere. I pilot the car onto the street. The warm afternoon sun kisses my face. The lyrics filling the car could easily be describing Honey Creek. A man waves from the post office as I drive by, and I wave back. It makes me laugh, because no one from Phoenix waves unless it's to tell you to slow down or hurry up. It's more of a signal there to move. It's more of a hello here. My good spirits have made today fly by. Dottie was rather upbeat, too. We made a contest about who could come up with the worst joke that my grandfather would eventually repeat. I won, but I bet Dottie would disagree with that. We also disagreed on the source of my mood. Dottie was sure it was because of Sophie. She said marriage looks good on me. I told her my optimism stemmed from Montgomery's visit tomorrow. I told her that I've been waiting on that day for weeks. That's true, I tell myself as I come to a stop sign. But she's not wrong, either. I grin as I glance all four ways and then proceed through the intersection. My mood probably has something, or a lot, to do with Sophie. It's hard not to feel good when you're with her. She's a boost to the ego. She makes you feel good. Sophie has a way of making you feel like a light has been turned on inside you, and that she sees you. It's incredible. I can't quite figure it out. I lay in bed last night and watched her sleep against my chest. She slumbers so peacefully. She curls up next to me and wraps her leg around mine like she needs me to stay put. It's cuddling in its rawest form. It's an act I've never been into. Until now. Jessica and I used to build a wall between us with pillows because neither of us liked to touch while we slept. But now I look forward to going home and ending the day with Sophie up against me. I glance at the clock. I have only 20 minutes before I need to get back to the clinic so Pap can head out to Birdie's. A sign sits to my right, informing me that the lemonade has deli sandwiches. With a sigh, I pull in. There's no way I can get to the Honey House and back to the clinic in 20 minutes if Sophie is home. I'll find myself wanting to stay with her instead. I have to be an adult. Damn it. I park the car and get out. The lemonade sits in between a hardware store and a building that isn't open anymore. It appears to have hosted music lessons or something at one point in the past. My phone rings in my hand, and I look down at the screen. My dad's number flashes as if it's warning me not to answer, to not destroy my mood. I slide it back into my pocket. Chimes ring against the door as I swing it open. Two cheery faces greet me with a wave and a hello as I step inside and inhale scents of cinnamon and vanilla. A long counter runs the length of the building on my right. Behind it is a deli-style operation with a grill, a fountain beverage machine, and ice cream freezers. On my left are tables and chairs and a booth or two. In the back of the building is a pharmacy that looks like it came right out of a television show. It extends the width of the building and has little chairs in front for people to wait. Walking inside here gives me a feeling of nostalgia. My mother worked here in high school, and her picture hangs somewhere on the wall above the tables and chairs. She used to bring me here for sandwiches when she'd pick me up in late July. Sophie and I would come in here too, for milkshakes, as often as we could get money from our grandparents.
Can I help you?
A blonde teenage girl smiles at me from the fountain beverage machine. Yes, please. I'd like a turkey sandwich with lettuce, tomato, and pickle.
Sure. Would you like a drink? You can get a bag of chips and a drink for $2 more.
That sounds great. Throw some plain chips and a cola on there for me.
You got it.
I take a seat toward the back and fight the urge to get it to go. The honey house is so close that I could still get my food and swing by there to say hello. Instead, I get out my phone and flip through the news feed. None of the headlines are interesting, and I find myself mostly staring off in a daze until the chair across from me is rattled. I look up to see a man about my age. He has reddish hair and a wide, friendly smile.
You must be the vet, he says.
I am.
Nice to meet you. I'm Aaron Andrews. I'm friends with Joe Bates.
He grabs the back of the chair and slides it out.
How do you like it here? Job said you were from Arizona. Must be a big change, huh?
It is, but I came here a lot growing up, so I knew what I was in for.
That's right. You're Dr. Fred's grandson.
He smiles again. This time it triggers a memory.
Let me ask you something, I say. Did you try to bungee jump off that bridge south of town with a paracord back in the day?
Aaron's eyes light up.
I might have done something stupid like that.
His brows pull together.
You were there, weren't you? You were the kid there with Sophie.
I can't help but laugh as I recall the afternoon I watched Aaron try to recreate a stunt he'd watched in a movie. Only in his case, the cord didn't recoil. It broke, and he ended up going for a direct dive into the water below.
That was me, I tell him. You were the one that talked me out of jumping off the cliff.
I figured that the odds of your feet weren't great, and that at least the bridge was lower. Your chances at survival were much higher. His laugh is loud, filling the building. The two men sitting by the door look at us before going back to their sandwiches.
You saved my life, man, Aaron says. I've always wondered who that kid was, or if you were there at all. I thought I might have imagined you. Had a headache for a couple of weeks after that.
He rubs his head absent-mindedly.
I don't know about saving your life, but I'm glad it worked out okay.
Believe it or not, that wasn't the dumbest thing I ever did, he says with a laugh.
But that'll be my legacy, I guess. The guy that did the dumb shit.
I join him with a laugh of my own. My food is placed before me. I decline anything else. Tina, according to her name tag, has a quick conversation with Aaron before scurrying back to the counter. Aaron sits back in his seat and folds his arms over his chest. His face is painted with amusement.
I heard you went and married Sophie, he says finally. Can't say I blame you.
My hands stall over my sandwich. He's being friendly and making conversation. I know this. But something about the smugness in his tone, like he's thought about Sophie like that, prickles something deep inside me.
You are correct, I say, looking him in the eye. We got married a few days ago.
Good for you, man. Good for you. If he catches my warning, he doesn't care. I'm not convinced he does, though, because he reaches his arms over his head and stretches with a loud yawn.
Okay, well, I better get out of here, he says, sitting up again. I'm glad we got to say hello. Yeah, me too. He gets to his feet. So now that you're here and basically family, we play poker at my house the first Friday of every month. I live on County Road 500, just north of the Turkey Barn. The game usually starts around 7 and goes until we run out of money. $50 buy-in. Bring your own beer. All right, I say, thrown off a little by the sudden invitation. Gonna run. See you next week. He walks backward toward the door. Tell Sophie hi for me. He flashes me his smile again before disappearing as quickly as he arrived. I'm not sure what to make of Aaron. He was nice and friendly, if not a little impulsive. I wonder if he always says what he's thinking, or whether he ever ponders it first. By the way he jumped off that bridge, I'm thinking he just goes for it. I take another bite and wonder if this is what life is like here. Random pop-ins from people just saying hello. Invitations to poker games just because. Sit-down lunches instead of drive-through windows. Life here goes at a different pace. It crawls instead of barreling down the fast lane. The things here that are important to people, things like community and celebrations, feel completely different from what's important to the rest of the world. It's something that I think I could get used to, especially if it meant that Sophie would be at my side. I grin as I take another bite of my sandwich. Maybe if this job with Montgomery doesn't work out, it won't be the end of the world. Just maybe, it'll all work out.
Chapter 20. Sophie. Warm water runs over my hands as I give them a final rinse. Concentrating today proved impossible. I gave up on paperwork an hour after Job and Liv left and focused my attention on cleaning the kitchen tile. Cleaning when stressed is a habit I picked up a long time ago. Apparently, cleaning gives me the feeling of being in control. It relaxes me to have things on the outside look orderly when my insides are chaos. My bathrooms aren't complaining, even if my fingers are. I gaze out the window as I let the water soothe my skin. The sun hovers over the tree line at the back of the property. A handful of birds pitter-patter beneath the tall oak tree that grows at a slant in the middle of the yard. The rope swing that Grandma hung for me when I was a child, and that Job repaired last summer, moves lazily in the breeze. I rinse the sink out before shutting off the water. Grabbing a towel, I dry my hands before looking up. Oh! Holden's reflection in the window startles me, but I catch myself before making a show of it. I continue to dry my hands while keeping my back to him. It takes a long couple of seconds to settle my breathing and trust my reaction enough to take another peek. When I do, I get a glimpse of him leaning against the door frame with his strong arms crossed over his chest. It's a view all its own. I'd be hard-pressed to look away under normal circumstances. But the fact that I know intimately the feeling of those arms around my waist, his shoulders under my palms, his lips on my body, it makes it even harder to stay composed. I force a swallow. Are you going to stand there like a weirdo, or are you going to say something? Are you going to stand there and pretend like you don't know I'm here, or are you going to turn around? Tossing the towel on the counter, I spin on my heel and am wholly unprepared for the sight in front of me. He shucked his work scrubs for a pair of gray sweatpants and a white cotton shirt that skims the ridges of his body. The shirt looks like it's made of the softest fabric, and the color highlights a set of tanned forearms that are muscled and thick. Shit. Turning around again, I pour myself a drink of ice-cold water from the refrigerator. Being thirsty, whether from dehydration or desperation, is not what I want to be. And the temperature in the kitchen just rose to a dangerous level. You okay there, sweet pea? He teases. Asshole. Me? I ask, clenching my hand so I don't fan my face.
I'm fine.
That you are.
He mumbles under his breath. He shoves off the doorframe with a grin as wide as the kitchen.
So, what are we going to do this evening, Mrs. McKenzie?
You. No. No, no, no. Sophia Louisa Bates. Get a grip. I shake my head to clear the errant thoughts.
I don't know, I say as casually as I can. I try to force the flutter in my stomach from that Mrs. McKenzie comment to stop.
I'm trying to decide what to do for dinner. How was your day at the clinic?
Not bad. I saw two dogs and a cat with three legs, thanks to a lawnmower. But that thing could run, let me tell you. Oh, and the highlight of my day was a guinea pig named Toots with an impacted bowel.
He makes a face.
The cat with the three legs has been alive longer than me. Its name is Midnight, and it's kind of the town cat. Everyone sort of takes care of it.
He furrows his brow.
Cats have a lifespan of 2 to 16, 17 years, give or take. There's no way that cat is older than you.
I cross my arms over my chest.
Well, it is. Well, fine. He laughs. On another more neutral note, is it wrong of me to say that I was hoping you were going to cook? Maybe something with chicken? Because I'm getting used to home-cooked food, and I kind of like it.
My grin at the compliment.
Don't bother trying to charm me now. If I was trying to charm you, you'd know it.
My face heats in response to his smirk.
I was going to fry some chicken breasts, but my hands hurt. I held them up for him to see the wrinkled pads of my fingers. I scrubbed the bathrooms all day and didn't wear gloves.
I could have helped you, and I totally have rubber gloves in my bag.
I back away slowly. That's an odd thing to carry around.
He chuckles. It's low, smooth, and melodic, and strums that little chord in my body that none of the blind dates that Liv and Job set me up on ever seem to hit. Probably because Holden is absolutely unrelated to me, no matter how far back you look, and has all his real teeth. And because he's absolutely gorgeous, and my husband.
There in case I run into an emergency animal situation, he says, rolling his eyes.
But back to more pressing topics.
Dinner. Can I help you make it? Or should we just go to Tank's?
I could totally go for a salad with ketchup dressing.
I smack my lips together.
I can taste it now.
He makes a face. I'm sorry. I thought you just said ketchup dressing.